What about when you can't even see black and white? When you can hardly see anything at all?
I am losing my eyesight. I no longer see clearly objects at a distance. Trees, buildings, street signs.
An excerpt from Susan Krieger's memoir, Things No Longer There.
In the mid-distance, the definition in people's faces disappears, as do the titles of books on shelves just a few feet from me. Objects that move quickly into my peripheral vision often hit a blind spot and then suddenly appear before me, startling me. I've gotten used to bumping into things.
The subtitle of Susan Krieger's book is Losing Sight and Finding Vision. It's the story of how one woman is coping with her loss of sight and has learned to listen and feel. Krieger is legally blind, though she can still see the basic shapes of many things. She says she started to lose her sight about 10 years ago.
I started gradually to have many floaters in front of my eyes, dark spots, and I didn't know what they were, and it became diagnosed after a year or two as birdshot retinochoroidopathy, and it causes blind spots, distortions, darkness of vision, smallness, many things that are associated with both central vision loss and peripheral vision loss.
What's been the hardest thing about going blind?
For me, at least, it's been fighting the internalization of negative attitudes. For instance, feeling that vision loss is something to feel bad about, or feeling that I'm less good now because I don't see as well or my life isn't less good. And I often don't experience these negative attitudes directly. I'll just have an experience, for instance, of something will take me more time to do. Getting from here to there, it takes me longer because I move more slowly. I have to be careful for my safety. And I'll think, well, I'm wasting a huge amount of my life, a huge amount of my time, and start to feel bad about it. And then I'll have to remind myself, well, you're doing this because you don't see very well.
I can understand the value of positive thinking. You have to live in the moment, as it were, and still you must be angry sometimes. I would think, you know, remembering what you could do and what you can't. And I understand that that may be exactly the wrong way to look at it, but still, it must be there sometimes.
Yeah, I tend to feel sad sometimes, or I wish, oh, I could get in the car and drive somewhere that I no longer drive, or I myself will tend to get afraid. Well, what if I can't get in the car and ride somewhere? I'll be stuck here. I'll get bored and I'll die. You know, I just have sort of those kind of big thoughts. And then to realize that I still have my internal life.
You must have taught yourself how to live, how to do things, how to get places without being able to see what you used to be able to see. What's different now from the way it used to be?
Well, let's see. There is the question of mobility. I am more dependent on rides or wait a longer time or I don't go shopping as much, where you get in the car and go spend money. So I probably spend less money. But I have a computer that talks to me. I'm much more reliant upon the voice, so that what I type is spoken aloud and the computer reads me my materials. I spend more time getting my materials for teaching and writing into digital form so the computer can read it to me. I feel things more. I garden, and I used to be able to see the colors of the flowers, and now they're kind of a more faded version of what they were and don't have that much definition. So I began having bigger plants that I could see. I began touching things more. I've begun appreciating larger shapes of things. For instance, I really like trees because they're very big and I can see their shapes against the sky. I like trees much more than anybody ought to, and I never really cared much. And I like mountains, too. They're very big when seen from a distance. So I have found that I worried that I would no longer be able to read and I would no longer be able to have pleasure. And what I have found is that my pleasure seems to adapt to what it is that I see, or if I'm not seeing, if I touch some of these things, the textures of them gives great pleasure. So it's been very, very good for me to realize that I can have pleasure no matter what my sight.
Has it changed the way that you interact with other people, do you think?
Yeah, these are wonderful questions. I have tended to be a very private person. I write and I teach, and I'll tend to be quiet with people, but with my blindness, it often becomes a subject of public conversation, both because I used to carry a white cane and now I have a guide dog, and people love dogs. And so people are constantly stopping me and asking about the dog, and I have to have a conversation with them. So I've become a much more public person, more articulate with people, and more comfortable with people.
You've adapted pretty well to the change in your life, but still there must be times when you're frustrated. I remember reading about your drive out, this is some time ago, before you gave up driving, your drive out to go bird watching before sunrise.
Yes.
It must have been hard for you out there in the dark when you didn't know what was going to be coming up.
Yeah, that's very true. This was, I hate to say it, in the public circumstance, since I probably should not have been driving, but I was driving in the total darkness of the very early morning to go bird watching on a country desert road, and I couldn't really see the road or the edges of the road. And I was very, very frightened.
What was so important to you that you were willing to put yourself in that kind of danger?
Well, I love the first light. I used to be able to see it, the very first light, when there's the blackness of the night and there's a very thin bit of light that comes at the horizon, and then there are many changes in the light before the sun actually rises. So I wanted to get there to see that first light, and then I wanted to see at this desert wildlife refuge the changes in colors in the sky and the birds rise up before sunrise.
The black and white light was changing now so that tans and browns began to appear. Tan tones glinted off the backs of the cranes and off their plumed rear gray feathers. The surface of the water in front of me was now silvery brown in some places, silvery ink blue in others. I turned around toward the marsh to see the wood of the observation deck glowing a deep yellow brown. I felt in a race for time to take it all in. There was dark green in the water. There was suddenly color. Where at first there'd been darkness, then dark shapes and gray and silver, now there was this tan and color and this bath of deep gold. This first gold was my favorite color time at the marsh. Then, as quickly as it had come, the dark golden moment was over. The trees in the cottonwood grove turned a lighter yellow. Still, the sun had not come up yet. The air around me felt suddenly cold.
One thing that is very clear is that loss of vision does not mean loss of memory of vision for you.
Not for me. I think they do say that the longer you have blindness, the more your visual imagery that you once had in the past will recede because, you know, your mind's not working in that visual way. I'm not sure how much our memories or my memory is so acutely visual as it is made up of all those associations we have with the visual, you know, the emotional meaning, just the emotional sense of things. As I have been losing my eyesight, I've been aware that I'm trying always to make a counterposing internal vision that says that I'm still valuable and things are okay and it isn't something terrible to lose your vision.
Yeah, that's the essential, isn't it, to keep Susan Krieger alive, to make sure that you know who you are. It's still, though, as you wrote about being hit by a car one day, and this is a while ago, you were out walking. Well, tell me the story of the day that you were hit by the car.
Yes. This is very momentous for me. I was just walking down a street in my neighborhood because I was no longer driving very much and stepped into the street and a car came around the corner and hit me, threw me up on the windshield, deposited me on the sidewalk, and I never saw it coming. It was in a blind spot out of my right eye on the side, and so I didn't see it. I think the driver may have assumed that I saw him because he wouldn't know I wouldn't see him. Anyway, it was a lesson to me about I need to be more careful. I hadn't then been using a white cane, and I started to use one to signal to the cars all the time that maybe I don't see them.
Yeah, we should add at this point that you said it was a very red car.
It was a very red car. Yes. Well, at first I didn't see it, and when I saw it, it was about 2 inches in front of me, about to toss me up on its hood, and I think there was a jolt of adrenaline I must have had, because I was sure that car was bright watermelon red.
When I told a friend who was totally blind about my accident, he said to me, "You have to use all your senses." Then he added, "If you don't mind my intruding, I think people with low vision have it worse. They think they see." Because my vision had been growing gradually worse, last summer I took a series of lessons in the use of a blind person's white cane. A man came to my house. He walked with me along the streets nearby, showing me how to use the cane. I learned to listen. "I'm feeling things," I said to him at first. "No, you're hearing them," he told me. And I learned to actually hear the buildings as we passed them. to hear the sound of a tree deflecting the wind, to hear the changing pattern of the air when I stepped away from a building. I learned that a sudden gust of wind and some sun told me it was a street corner. I felt that the world of walking up a street and not seeing the buildings, but hearing them, was actually richer, less flat, more busy, more alive than the visual world. Then I went back to what I could see, because it was easier, and I was used to it.
You've experienced this for quite a while now. You've had a lot of time, I guess, to get used to being your version of blind. Would you go back? Would you want your vision again if you could have it?
I think, as far as I feel, I don't need it back. And I think I need to note to myself that either would be okay, but I think I've gotten quite used to the amount of blindness that I have and the thought that it's changing. And so this is my reality now, and I don't really want the other reality. I don't need it.
Are you comfortable now calling yourself blind?
That's a good question. I am sometimes comfortable, sometimes not. I have a deep-seated, I think, idea in my mind is probably a stereotype that the only person who is blind is a person who's totally blind. Blind means not seeing at all. And as I've been losing my sight, I've become aware that, you know, there are many kinds of blindness, many degrees. Most people who are blind have some sight. What's really important here is that I'm blind, even if I'm not totally blind. It's hard for me to make that statement, but I feel it's true and very, very important to make. So I make it as often as I can. But it's also hard for me to say I'm a woman. It's hard for me to say I'm a feminist. You know, these words are so loaded, but they're important, and so I say them.
Susan Krieger. Her book is called Things No Longer There, a memoir of losing sight and finding vision. A special thanks to Catherine Braun for her readings.